Welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series on MAP 21 Freight Provisions. My name is Nicholas Kehoe, and I will moderate today's seminar. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for audio know that you will need to mute your computer speakers or else you will be hearing audio over the computer as well. Today, we will have four presenters: Robert Arnold, Crystal Jones, and Ed Stracco of the Federal Highway Administration, as well as Paul Baumer of the Office of the Secretary. Robert Arnold has been serving as the Federal Highway Administration Acting Director, Office of Freight Management and Operations since July 2012. His official position is Director, Office of Transportation Management. This office is responsible for national programs focused on the reduction of roadway congestion. Its focus is mainly with recurring congestion, such as the areas of pricing, active traffic management, and traveler information. As a member of the agency's senior executive service, he is responsible for contributing to the development of overall strategic planning, policy development, and developing legislative proposals for the administration. Crystal Jones currently serves as a lead transportation specialist on the Office of Freight Management and Operations Program Delivery Team. In this capacity, she is responsible for overseeing the delivery of freight infrastructure programs, freight capacity building, vehicle size and weight enforcement, and implementation of legislation. Prior to her current position, Crystal Jones served as a program manager within the Office of Freight Management and Operations. During this time, Crystal has been responsible for the development and implementation of programs and initiatives to improve efficiency of goods movement across the United States and international land border crossings. She has also led Federal Highway Administration's effort to establish performance measures in the area of freight, and most recently, Crystal served as the Federal Highway Administration Program Manager for the Tiger Program. Ed Stracco works in the Federal Highway Administration's Office of Freight Management and Operations, where he is a team leader for policy, research, and analysis. Ed has served as the Federal Highway Administration's Tiger Program Coordinator and manages several large infrastructure programs, including projects of national and regional significance. Ed focuses on freight performance measures, urban freight issues, freight policy, economics, and finance. He is the co-chair of TRB's Freight Planning and Logistics Committee. Prior to joining the Federal Highway Administration, Ed was the manager of multimodal studies for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Ed also worked as a land use and community planner for a number of jurisdictions. Finally, Paul Baumer serves as a policy analyst in the Office of the Assistant Secretary for the Transportation Policy of the United States Department of Transportation. His work focuses on freight and goods movement, innovative infrastructure finance and project delivery, as well as discretionary grant program design and implementation. He has worked as an evaluator and provided extensive programmatic support to the multimodal Tiger discretionary grant program and is currently staffing the Department of Transportation's Freight Policy Council and helping coordinate the implementation of MAP 21 freight provisions. Today's seminar will last for 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for the audience question and answer. If during the presentation you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area. Please make sure to send your question to everyone. The presenters will be unable to answer your questions during the presentations, but I will start off the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. If we run out of time and are unable to address all the questions, we will attempt to get written responses from the presenters to the unanswered questions. The PowerPoint presentation used during this seminar is available for download from the file download box on the lower right-hand corner of your screen. The presentation will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and transcript. I will notify all attendees once these materials are posted online. As a final note, the Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, you must type your first and last name into the chat box. I have included more detailed instructions in your credits after the seminar. Please also download the evaluation form from the FileShare box and submit this form to me after you have filled it out. While the Federal Highway Administration does not formally offer professional development hour credits and will not provide proof of attendance, we have made the agenda available in the file download box that participants can use to self-certify and submit credits on their own. We are going to go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is on MAP 21's freight prohibitions. As a reminder, if you have questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they will be answered in the last 30 minutes of the seminar. Our presentation will begin with our first presenter, Bob Arnold, Federal Highway Administration. And Bob, when you are ready, you can get started.
Well, thank you very much. It looks like we have a pretty good attendance for this webinar. And so I'm very excited to be able to share some of our thoughts with you on the MAP 21 freight provisions. But let me kind of start off and kind of overlay what MAP 21 did or will be doing for us. MAP 21 creates a streamlined, performance-based, and multimodal program to address the many challenges facing the U.S. transportation system. These challenges include improving safety, maintaining infrastructure condition, reducing traffic congestion, protecting the environment, reducing delays in project delivery, and relevant to this webinar, improving efficiency of the system and freight movement. It contains a number of themes. Strengthens America's highways. MAP 21 expands the national highway system to incorporate principal arterials not previously included. Investment targets the enhanced NHS, with more than half of the highway funding going to the new program devoted to preserving and improving most of the most important highways. It establishes a performance-based program. Under MAP 21, performance management will transform federal highway programs and provide a means to more efficient investment of federal transportation funds by focusing on national transportation goals. It creates jobs and supports economic growth. MAP 21 authorizes $82 billion in federal funding for fiscal years 13 and 14 for road, bridge, bicycling, and walking improvements. In addition, MAP 21 enhances innovative financing and encourages private sector investments through a substantial increase in funding for the TIFIA program. It also includes a number of provisions designed to improve freight movement in support of national goals. It supports the department's aggressive safety agenda. MAP 21 continues a successful highway safety improvement program, doubling funding for infrastructure safety, strengthening the linkage among modal safety programs, and creates a positive agenda to make significant progress in reducing highway fatalities. It also continues to build on other aggressive safety efforts, including the department's fight against distracted driving and its push to improve transit and motor carrier safety. Streamlines federal highway transportation programs. The complex array of programs was simplified, substantially consolidating the program structure into a smaller number of broader core programs. MAP 21 accelerates project delivery and promotes innovation. It incorporates a host of changes aimed at transportation projects. Changes will improve innovation and efficiency in the development of projects through the planning and environmental process to project delivery. Freight had a prominent role in MAP 21, with a number of significant freight provisions included. It elevated freight as an important issue not only in terms of economic vitality, but also safety of freight movement. MAP 21 is not the end, and as we begin to implement MAP 21, we should be thinking towards the future and where the freight program will be in 2 years when MAP 21 expires.
Thank you, Bob. This is Crystal Jones, and at this time I'll talk about some of the funding provisions under MAP 21, and specifically the most significant funding provision related to freight. In general, as Bob said, this is a two-year bill, and it actually extends MAP 21 as the beginning of MAP 21 provision. It extended safety loop through FY 2012, which is September 30th for the federal government, and most of the other provisions went into effect on October 1st. In terms of funding, the funding for the MAP 21 law is at FY 12 levels plus a minor adjustment for inflation. Again, it ensures that the highway trust fund taxes are solvent until for 2 years. So it's a two-year bill that we're working with. It's not a 4-year bill or a 5-year bill as we've seen in the past. In terms of freight, the most significant funding provision was a provision that would allow us to increase the federal share up to 95% on interstate project and 90% for other projects. This funding provision, I will note, is not additional funding. It allows the states to increase funding using their current appropriated funds for up to 95% on the interstate and, again, 90% for other projects that are freight-related. In terms of what types of projects are eligible, there are two major provisions or two major criteria that have to be met before you could qualify or be eligible for the increased federal share. Number one, it has to enhance the efficient movement of freight, including making progress towards performance targets for freight movement, which we'll talk about later on in the webinar. And it also has to be identified in the state freight plan. And again, the main key word here that I want to emphasize, that I'll talk a little bit about how the department's implementing that, is it is not a must provision, it is a may provision. And in terms of how we're implementing it, the next slides will talk about that. The department has made a determination to implement this section, which is section 1116, on an interim basis. And during that interim period, no state could authorize projects for the increased federal share above 10% of their allocated funds unless otherwise approved by the secretary. So that's the first part of the interim implementation that should be a takeaway from this, is that it is only allowed up to 10% of a state's allocated fund. The selection of projects is done on a case-by-case basis, so just because it's an eligible project doesn't mean that it will be selected for the increased federal share. It is going to be evaluated on a case-by-case and project-by-project basis. And the Secretary has determined that the highest priority of projects that would be eligible under this interim period will be those projects that make improvements to intermodal freight connectors, improvement to freight and truck bottlenecks, provide public rail facilities or private rail facilities that benefit public highway users, and also projects or groups of projects that are integrated along a corridor. In terms of what types of projects are eligible, the legislation says that it could be a construction or rehabilitation project, it could be an intelligent transportation systems project, it could be an effort to reduce environmental impact. So the guidelines for the types of projects that are eligible are outlined in the law, but these are the types of projects during the interim period that will be given the highest priority for the increased federal share. In terms of process of how this works, there is no new funding with this provision. Again, it is based on the state's current allocation of funding, and each project, through that project-by-project selection process, will be evaluated for purposes, and then it will eventually come to headquarters to work with the Office of the Secretary to make a determination on whether the project should be allowed to utilize the increased federal share. In terms of what types of information will be needed in order to submit or to have a project be considered at project authorization, it will be data-driven, so it can't be just a project that doesn't come with the analysis that shows how it benefits freight movement. So that's a key factor in whether or not the project would ultimately be selected for the increased federal share. In the interim period, we won't have the performance measures for freight that are required under Section 150D of MAP 21. So in the interim period, what we'll be requesting as part of the project justification or project authorization is a demonstration of how the project meets freight performance goals that are outlined in a state freight plan, which we'll talk about as another major freight provision in some follow-on slides. And again, that next bullet on there says that it has to be referenced in a state freight plan. And that state freight plan can be a standalone freight plan or a freight section of an existing state transportation plan. So, again, another key point here is that it must be identified either as a project or as an investment strategy within the state freight plan. And, again, in order to allow a decision to be made on whether the increased federal share should be allowed, there needs to be significant information that clearly describes how the project addresses freight needs and freight goods movement on the highway system or transportation system. And so that's another point to emphasize, is it does not have to be a highway project. It can be a project that is multimodal. So the projects that are eligible are projects that would otherwise be eligible under Title 23, because, again, the funding that's available for these projects are funds that are available under the regular Title 23 funding process. Another key point to make is the projects must also meet other federal requirements such as NEPA, such as meeting the Uniform Act. So these projects that are authorized will be going through the regular federal aid process and authorized through the regular federal aid process.
This is Ed Straka. I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the funding provisions in here. On this slide, you see some of the core highway formula programs. As Bob mentioned earlier, there's a real consolidation of programs that we have down to a half dozen or so. Highlighted a couple important ones on here, and a couple of the elements under there I wanted to touch on. The first one is under the Surface Transportation Program, and there's new language that allows federal funds to be spent inside the port gate on intermodal facilities. And that's a big change there, an important change. The other thing that runs through both the STP program, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, and the National Highway Performance Program is the eligibility for truck parking, which is new. Last time, as you see here in Safety Lou, we had a specific truck parking program, and you could say we were so successful that we got rid of it, and now it's eligible for under many different formula programs. I think that this shows that Congress has recognized the importance of truck parking, as we have, too. Something that you need to consider now that although there's more money eligible for truck parking, you're going to be competing against a whole variety of other projects, and so it's important for you to get your information together to make a good case for truck parking because it is an important element of the freight system. For TIFIA, freight projects have always been eligible, and we know that many of the mega freight projects, we need to cobble together resources, and TIFIA is a good component of that. Under MAP 21, we see that program funding levels have expanded, and as you can see up there, rail projects are still eligible. They have tweaked the language a little bit. The underlying language is new there, but rail projects are still eligible, as are projects inside the gates on port property, just as they are under STP. Projects of National Regional Significance was a program that was established under Safety Lou, and this looks at funding any transportation projects, some of the big critical ones that are important for national, regional, freight, or passenger transportation needs. There are a couple minor tweaks to the eligibility and the criteria, but it stayed mostly the same. The difference here from some of the other programs under MAP 21 and the traditional way that Federal Highways funded is that this is going to be a two-step process. Congress has only authorized $500 million. Congress needs to take another act. They need to appropriate the money for us to be able to do anything. And they haven't taken that action yet. So although there's $500 million authorized, they still need to appropriate it. The other thing to note, regardless of what Congress does with the appropriations, they've also asked for a report back to them by October 1st, 2014. And this is really to look at what types of projects are out there that could be considered projects of national regional significance. And we're supposed to put together a comprehensive list of these projects and do an analysis of the information collected and see how it would rate as a project of national regional significance. So we will be going forward with that. All right, the next area, a bunch of P's, policy planning and performance. The first thing here is national freight policy, and this is under Section 1115. And there are a number of different sub-provisions in here. But up here on the screen, you see the goals that Congress has set out related to this national freight policy, and it covers a wide variety of areas that are very familiar to us in the transportation sector, from safety to infrastructure, good repair, operations, economic efficiency, congestion, the environment. All very important. Go ahead. One of the sub-elements under this section is the establishment of the National Freight Network, and this is to be established by the Secretary, and there are three different elements in here. There's the primary freight network, and that needs to be designated by USDOT within a year, and this is 27,000 miles of the really critical highway corridors around the nation. Then there's a second part, which is the portions of the interstate system not designated as part of the primary freight network. And then the third component is critical rural freight corridors that are designated by the states. In addition to the national freight network, there have been some changes to the national highway system. Bob had mentioned this briefly before, and the TICs, the cap off where we were, expands it. For us, I think what we're most interested in on the freight side is the principal arterial routes and some of the connector highways that go to the border crossing and some of the key facilities there. Another section under the development of the National Freight Strategic Plan, this is to be developed within 3 years, and this is needs to be an inclusive process, and it's really being seen as a multimodal document. We need to be looking at all those different goal areas we saw before and across all the modes. And the Freight Policy Council is steering this effort across the department. On this slide, you see some of the elements we need to consider here, from the conditions and performance of the system, the bottlenecks, some best practices for improving the system, and a couple other key ones for us in, that we've been working on over the last couple of years, multi-state projects, encouraging jurisdictions to collaborate. In addition to that, within 2 years, the department needs to come out with a freight conditions and performance report. And again, this is multimodal, have measures covering all modes of transportation, and it'll relate to all policy goal areas. And I think that it's important to note here that in MAP 21, there are really two sets of performance measures related to freight. One of them is in this conditions and performance report, and the department is working on establishing them now. We started with a couple outreach sessions already to hear from folks about what type of performance measures we should be looking at, and we're going to continue to move forward on that. And this is what will be used for the National Conditions and Performance Report, and it's also something that states will want to consider when they're establishing their state freight plans and they're looking at performance. It should be correlated there. The other section of MAP 21 that deals with freight performance measures is section 1203, and this is not just 1203 is not just freight performance measures, but it's a variety of measures for the national highway system. And the one measure that we have under there for freight is freight movement on the interstate system, and we have 18 months to start developing and get a performance measure in place for that. And states are going to be required to set targets after that and then start reporting on those. MPOs will also have to set targets. So in this case, it's a very focused measure. It's freight movement on the interstate system. And this is the measure that states and MPOs will be reporting on. The other one that we just talked about under the conditions and performance report, much broader set of measures and multimodal in nature. Crystal, let me turn it back to you.
Okay, the next two sections that we'll go over briefly are section 1117 and section 1118. Section 1117 deals with state freight advisory committees. And both these sections, 1117 and 1118, are encouragement, so they're not required by law. They are encouraged, and the Secretary must actively encourage these two provisions. And the Department has already issued guidance on both of these provisions. And the main purpose of the State Freight Advisory Councils are to ensure that all sectors of the transportation stakeholder communities are represented in the development of freight priorities for a particular state. So a freight advisory committee must consist of representatives from the public and private sector, including state DOTs, local governments, freight carriers, ports, freight industry, workforce, and freight associations. And I know many of the states who already have advisory committees in place have gone through this process, but the legislation specifically prescribes what types of entities should be involved in a state freight advisory committee. The state advisory committee, again, this is an encouragement, but the legislation does tell, in order to say that a state advisory committee exists, it gives special, specific things that must be met. Again, the types of folks that are involved, and it also tells the types of activities the advisory committee should engage in. As an example, again, they are there to advise the state on developing freight-related priorities for a particular state, including the types of projects, the funding needs, and it also serves as a forum for the state transportation decision makers to impact freight mobility within the state. Again, these are encouragements, not required, but the department has issued guidance on these two provisions. The next one, Nick. The next one are state freight plans, and if you remember the slides on the increased federal share, one of the things that must be met is you must have a state freight plan in place. Again, along with the state advisory committee guidance, the department has issued guidance on state freight plans, and it is an encouragement. However, to qualify or to be eligible for the increased federal share, you must have a state freight plan in place, and that plan must it can be an independent plan or a plan that's incorporated in the state long-range plan, which was a point that I mentioned earlier when we discussed the increased federal share. With regard to the elements of the state freight plan, if any of you reviewed the guidance that was put out by the department, you will see that it included some things that were in addition to some of the elements that were, or in complement to some of the elements that were prescribed in the legislation. These are the minimum elements that must be included in the state freight plan. However, those elements that were described in the guidance issued by the department are done to ensure some consistency, so when we roll the information that we glean from the state freight plans up to the national levels for that national strategic plan that Ed talked about, there'll be some consistency. But as a minimum, to be considered a state freight plan, these particular elements listed on these slides, identification of trends, a description of freight policies and strategies and performance measurements, a description of how the plan will meet national freight goals when established. Again, this was the area that we talked about, that in the interim period until we establish those performance goals under Section 167, you'll have state freight goals or freight goals that are specific to a particular jurisdiction. But eventually those goals that will be included in a state freight plan must be consistent with the goals that will be established under Section 167, which is the area on performance measures. The state freight plan is seeking to address innovative technologies as a method of increasing freight needs, so it doesn't have to necessarily tie freight, how you address freight to infrastructure improvements. It is seeking to use intelligent transportation and innovative technologies as a method to address freight issues within a particular state. And again, that those last two bullets there, particularly the inventory of the facilities with mobility issues, freight bottlenecks, all this ties back to the types of projects that could potentially be eligible for the increased federal share. So the goal of this section is to encourage states to develop a freight plan in order that they might be eligible for the increased federal share for projects that address efficiency of goods movement. And again, before I turn it over to Ed, I will note again that the department has issued the guidance on these two sections, and the comments were received on November 15th, and the department is currently evaluating those comments. So some of the questions that come up today, we may not have the specific answers to, but certainly when those comments that were received as part of the interim guidance that was issued are evaluated, we'll arrange another outreach opportunity to address those concerns and comments that came in as part of that guidance process. I guess I'm keeping going here. Sorry, Nick. Another area that was related to vehicle size and weight, and fortunate or unfortunate, how it may be interpreted, we had the opportunity to exercise the Section 1511 provision, which essentially allows the states to issue divisible load permits for the interstate system during times of national emergency. The guidance for this has also been issued, and at the end, I'm sure we'll have our MAP 21 guidance link that we can make available where the guidance is. But again, specifically what this provision, 1511, did was give states the ability to issue permits for divisible loads, which are loads that typically can't be dismantled or divided in times of an emergency. Again, key points to note, it has to be a presidentially declared disaster under the Stafford Act, so it can't be an emergency declared by a government, it has to be, or a state government, it has to be an emergency that has been declared by the president under the Stafford Act. permits are issued in accordance with the state law. So what this, again, does is it gives the state the ability to issue a permit. It does not require them to issue permits during special emergencies. It gives them the ability to issue divisible load permits that augments their current ability to issue permits for non-divisible loads. So the states already have the ability to issue permits for non-divisible loads. What this does is give the ability to issue permits for divisible loads. Again, the permits aren't for anything that's traveling on a highway system in a state or area that's been impacted by the emergency. It is specifically for those vehicles that are delivering relief supplies, which is defined in our guidance, to an emergency area. The permit is required to expire no later than 120 days after the declaration of the emergency by the president. So it is time specific, and again, it specifically gives the authority to issue permits for the interstate system. Again, we had the opportunity to exercise this provision recently with Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast. Some of the big things to emphasize from what we learned from Sandy, it is not a waiver, it is a permit, and Congress gave the authority to issue a permit for divisible loads, not a waiver. So it is still considered a permitting process, not a waiver process. When operating through multiple states, it's still important that the carrier understand that one state issuing a permit does not give you the authority to operate in another state. So there is some multi-state coordination that may be necessary, and we did plenty of that for Hurricane Sandy. But in essence, what a carrier probably ultimately would end up doing during a situation like this is operating to the lowest common denominator. So if you're a load that's traveling through multiple states, it's important to understand that the coordination process must allow for the carrier to operate throughout those multiple states based on the permit that's issued in the individual states. Again, another lesson that we learned that is very difficult, though I think when we issued our guidance, we envisioned that the permit would be issued on a per load basis. And obviously, when you have rapid movement and rapid response, we did learn that it's probably most likely that this provision will play out in something akin to a blanket permit that specifies routes and weights and permits that are allowed within a state. So in our guidance, we'll be issuing probably some revised guidance here in the near future that takes into consideration some of the lessons that we learned from Sandy. And again, these are a couple of the three that we picked out to share as part of this webinar, but we anticipate issuing revised guidance on the Section 1511 in the very near future. Okay, a couple other size and weight provisions. These are fairly minor in nature, but we do still have some guidance and perhaps some regulation changes that we'll have to make for these particular provisions. And one of those was that we had a provision to allow increased weight allowance for auxiliary power units. And this provision was increased from 400 pounds to 550 pounds per vehicle. And again, this is a very minor change, but something obviously that was important to some sectors of the industry, and it emerged as a provision under MAP 21. So we'll be looking at what guidance and what regulatory changes we'll have to make with regard to this. But again, and a key thing to note here, it is not a must. It is a state's, the states can allow this. It does not have to allow this. So again, we'll have to understand how this will be implemented throughout the United States, because this is not a required must. It is the state may allow the exemption or the weight allowance for auxiliary power units. The other thing is that there was a temporary provision to exempt axle weight restrictions for public transit vehicles. This has been made permanent, so we'll be issuing revised regulation to account for the permanent nature of this provision that was previously a temporary provision in Section 1522.
All right, there are three truck-related studies I wanted to quickly touch on. The first one is a truck parking survey that USDOT is going to conduct, and we have 18 months to do this. And there are really three components of this: taking a look at what the truck volumes are in each state, looking at the ability test facilities for the trucks in each state, and then developing metrics to measure the adequacy of truck parking. The second one is a truck size and weight study, and I think you could kind of see this as two evaluations and assessments that are going to be done simultaneously. The first one is really a comparative analysis of trucks operating at or below the federal truck size and weight limits in comparison to trucks operating above the federal truck size and weight limits, and looking at that in relationship to crash rates, pavement impacts, bridge impacts, and the level of compliance, and also the cost to deliver the enforcement. The second piece is evaluating the implications of operating some alternative configuration vehicles, including a six-axle, 97,000-pound truck on different parts of the federal aid system, and looking at elements such as diversion between rail and trucks, impacts on safety and pavement and bridge there. And we have 2 years to complete that. The last one I wanted to touch on dealt with compilation of existing size and weight laws in the states, and Congress has directed USDOT to compile these laws and do that within 2 years. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul to talk a little bit about implementation of the freight provisions in MAP 21.
Thank you, Ed, and I can tell you I'm very excited that there's so much participation on this webinar and there's so much interest in this area because obviously there's a lot going on. As you can understand, we just took 30 minutes going through all of everything that's going on, so it's good to see so much enthusiasm out there. I'm going to talk about the implementation, how we're going to try and work on all of these things we've been discussing for the next 3 years or so. The first thing I'll bring up is the Freight Policy Council. I've already seen some questions about that, so it's good to get out of the way. The Secretary decided, recognizing how much MAP 21 provided us in terms of instructions to work on these freight issues, to create the Freight Policy Council, which is an internal council consisting of representatives from the several different operating administrations in the department and across the Office of the Secretary to really help coordinate the effort at implementing these provisions across the modes. I think one of the things that the department has been lacking for a real coordinated freight initiative, so that's what this Freight Policy Council is assembled to serve. So I know there's been a lot of confusion about the Freight Policy Council. Its membership, if you want to get a good understanding of what it's supposed to do, actually the charter for the Freight Policy Council is on the Office of Policy's website. So if you go and search in Google for the DOT, Office of the Secretary, Office of Policy, somewhere in there is the charter for the Freight Policy Council, and that will give you a good sense of the mission of the Freight Policy Council, its members, and what they're going to be working on. But obviously, there's a lot here, so the Freight Policy Council will be relying on a multimodal staff to help propel a lot of these efforts forward. So I'm a member here along with Ed and Crystal, and there's a number of other folks that, and Bob, of course, across the department who are working on these issues simultaneously, sort of pushing them forward as they move forward. So that's sort of the composition of the Freight Policy Council and the staff that are supporting it. But another important component to this whole implementation effort is you out there around the country, those are the stakeholders engaged on the freight initiatives. We've already held a number of freight events here locally in Washington. We've reached out to a lot of you. A lot of you have come in to see us. We're going to do more roundtables around the country as DOT officials travel. They want to hear what you have to say on how we should implement this bill and on the products as we produce them. We'll, of course, be publishing them in the Federal Register, and you'll be asked to contribute to us frequently along the way. So that gets to our next steps. Obviously, we have a lot of outreach to be doing. You can find a lot of information on our website, including fact sheets and Q&As and the like on our guidance. As we move forward, obviously October 1st, we've started to phase in all of the requirements since that's when the bill became official. And we are going to continue to produce guidance and regulation as we move forward. So we look forward to working with all of you, and I look forward to answering some of your questions on what I've already seen kind of coming up in the chat window. So with that, I guess we'll move to the question period.
Right, Nick?